Let's Talk Letts, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.
Hello, and welcome to our latest episode of our podcast, Let's Talk Letts. I'm Heidi Shackle, the CEO of the Lettings Hub, the tenant referencing business that got good at tech. And Let's Talk Letts is our regular roundup of news and views on a whole range of subjects spanning the private rented sector. Now, in this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Jo Bourne, the founder of Impact Consultancy, and she has had a long career in the property sector. She's going to share some of that with us today. She's a consultant and a coach and is totally hands-on to help agents who are looking to grow their businesses. She's also a huge part of the Women in Estate Agency Facebook group. And interestingly, and entirely unplanned, Jo is also the latest in a long line of inspirational women we've had as guests on our podcast, definitely over the last few weeks. As I say, this is entirely unplanned, but Friday also happens to be International Women's Day. And so what a great opportunity we have to talk about the impact that she's had on the progression of so many women within our sector. So without further ado, I'm going to get started. Welcome, Jo, and thank you so much for joining us today. If we could allow you to introduce yourself and tell our listeners a little bit about you and more about Impact.
Thanks very much, Heidi. And first of all, thank you for inviting me. It's a real pleasure to be here today. My career in estate agency started a long time ago, and really accidentally, I suppose, back in the early 1990s, I was mom to two young boys, and I wanted to do something. I wanted to get out of the house, but I wanted to also be able to be at home for the children as well. And I actually took a weekend job at the local estate agents just down the road from where we lived, which was at that time William H. Brown's, part of the Sequins Connells group. And it was the start of what was to be a 23-year journey with the Connells group. So I started as a weekend sales negotiator in the days before Rightmove, in the days before mobile phones, really, and then progressed to be an area director responsible for 10 sales and lettings branches in Yorkshire. I live in Leeds and I've always worked in that area. And that's a role that I did for 13 years. In 2015, I was about to turn 50 and I decided, well, it was time for a change. I don't really know particularly why. I thought I'd fallen out of love with agency. I realised I just needed a change and didn't really know what that change was going to be. Other than what I do know is that I like helping people. That was one thing over my 23 years at William H. Brown that I really did enjoy, whether that was customers, whether that was my teams. And over a period of 6 months, I thought about what I wanted to do. And in early 2016, I set up Impact, my company, which is, and as has been since then, all about training, coaching, development, primarily in estate agency. I have worked with some conveyancers, but primarily within estate agency, lettings, mortgages, that kind of industry, because that's what I've always known. And I've been fortunate since then to work over the last 8 years with a number of fantastic clients, both corporate and independent businesses, on short-term, long-term contracts, always working freelance, delivering training, coaching, team development, basically whatever the client wants, really.
I guess it's a fantastic introduction. As you were kind of going through it, I was thinking, oh, the little boys are not little boys anymore, and Rightmove is now such a big thing, and pay for advertising has changed. So you've kind of seen it all and gone on a massive transition, I'm sure, kind of across that time.
Yeah, those little boys, as you say, yeah, are grown men of businesses of their own. And one of them, you know, is a dad with an 8-year-old daughter. So I'm a grandma as well. So, absolutely.
Lovely. So obviously, as you mentioned, Jo, you offer a kind of a whole range of services and support for letting agents. And I suppose what I wondered to kind of kick us off is, what would you say are the main kind of triggers for a letting agent to make contact in the first place and ask for help or guidance? And at the same time, what really are the big things that a letting agent needs to focus on in 2024? Like, how can you help them the most?
Yeah, sure. And the what happens is usually somebody contacts me and they've got a problem. They've got something. It doesn't always know. They don't always know what it is. They know they need some kind of help. And it might be that they've got a member of the team that's not performing perhaps how they want to be. It might be that they're looking at introducing new income streams, new terms of business, changes to the way they're operating. It might be that they've acquired another part of the business. It might be just things don't feel to be working in the way that they want them to be. Or it might be things are going really, really well. And I've been lucky to work with some really great agents. And all they want is another pair of ears, another voice to just really quite often get in a room and look at what they're doing really well and what can we do even better. So my approach is always very much an initial discovery meeting call to find out what it is they really would like to work on, and then look to create a bespoke, whether it's a one-off workshop, a series of coaching sessions or a program, what it is that they're wanting to achieve from that. And it's always what I really like is being able to bespoke that to that particular business, so getting into the nitty-gritty of their operations. So because I was always operational, I suppose, for 23 years, I've got a real insight into running offices, running businesses and building teams. So using that knowledge to be able to then apply that to perhaps an issue that they've got. And that's usually my starting point, Heidi, as to where we go.
It sounded to me, as you were kind of talking about that, it's like the same reason why you might go and see a psychic, i.e. that you've either got a big problem, like, do you know what I mean? You're like, come on, tell me the future. How is this going to work out? Or actually, everything is perfectly fine in your life. And you're like, you know, I feel totally confident walking in here to get an answer. But I suppose that's the thing, isn't it? It's like business owners or people that are kind of, you know, near the top of the tree, I suppose, in businesses, who do they turn to and ask for help or guidance or advice? And actually, they're not expected to know everything themselves. None of us are. We've all got different backgrounds of where we've ended up in a certain place. And that might be a marketing background or a sales background. And we can't be expected to be amazing at finance, as an example. So when is nothing off limits? You know, I suppose, no, is that simple and can come and talk to you about anything?
Absolutely it is. And do you know what I always say to people is if I don't know the answer or I'm not the right fix for you, I will tell you. And I think that's really, really important. I think it's really important to me, the people who I work with. I think that matters incredibly because not everybody's going to be, you know, not everybody's going to like me. I'm not necessarily going to like everybody else either. It's about finding the right fit and also the right skill set. So one of the things I said to somebody very recently is legislation and compliance is not really my bag. Yes, I understand it. Yes, I could cover it, but I don't keep up to speed with everything on a day-to-day basis. So I would automatically, as I did last week, say to a prospective client, it's not me you want to talk to, but I can recommend 2, 3, 4 other people or point you in the right direction. And I think that's really important. That's about being honest about what I can do and what I can't do. And I love your idea of the crystal ball. Maybe that's exactly what it is. Because when I walk into a room with somebody new, and usually quite often directors of a business, they don't always know what they want. I don't know what they want. And it's asking questions. It's a bit like going on a market appraisal. It's why is somebody looking to let their property? Why are they looking to be a landlord? What is it they're wanting? And asking those questions and then looking to tailor those solutions to that person's problem, for want of a better word.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, we all have some self-doubt, you know, in things that we do. Do you often find that is kind of what holds people back sometimes from actually contacting you sooner, and they feel quite relieved once they kind of have somebody to chat it through with?
I think that's a really interesting point. I think sometimes people don't always want to, sometimes they can't articulate what it is they want or they don't know. And also sometimes, is it a sign of a weakness in your business if you actually have to reach out to somebody, as opposed to it's actually a real strength to, even if it's just a reach out, have a a couple of hours conversation call and realise actually you're okay, you're on the right track, or you're on the right track of 50%, 60% of it, but actually with a few tweaks, you could do something different. And, yeah, sure. And quite often it is, as I say, it's just that different, certainly on team days and things like that, it's often just a different voice and a different perspective saying probably quite often what their branch managers or the directors have been saying, or the business owners or whatever, but just in a different environment where everybody's focused that particular day on whatever it is we've decided we're going to work on.
A little while ago, we actually ran a webinar on, I think it was called something like The Art of Inspiring a Team. And the reason we did that is we realised that there's a few things that we'd learnt along the way in our business of things that just work for us, that didn't cost much money, that were really quite easy to implement, that the staff actually really liked. And we talked about some of the basics of how, you know, you should inspire them, how you can lead them and manage them, but also like give loads and loads of kind of hints and tips as to things that can be considered. And after that webinar, it kind of felt like a bit of an anticlimax, you know, when you kind of dial off because no one's really got any questions and you're kind of walking away. But I had three businesses then that reached out to me and said, oh, I really enjoyed what you said. And they had the slides and things. But one particular business I then kind of did a call with. And he said, oh, we're a really small business. There's just kind of me and another director. And then, he had a few problems or challenges, really, with his staff. And he just thought, I don't really have anyone to talk to about it. Or like one, you know, and near enough what he was doing is he was preempting what was going to happen, even though it hadn't happened. So he'd near enough worked it up in his mind to be a big problem, you know, of what was about to come. But it hadn't happened, you know. And it was kind of, I suppose, just having the ears of somebody else to say, well, that hasn't happened yet, that might never happen, you know, what if actually X or Y happens, I don't think it will be as bad as you think. And anyway, one of the people got in kind of contact with me afterwards and said, you're right, actually loads of great things have come out about it, but it's just about that confidence, isn't it, sometimes, to reassurance of somebody else or somebody saying, yeah, crack on, you're doing the right thing, or give it a go.
It is, and it's a bit like when we do a workshop, perhaps sometimes with valuers or whatever, and we'll talk about practicing what they're going to say, or if they've got a difficult conversation workshop, actually having that conversation with a colleague before you have that difficult conversation, perhaps with a landlord or a tenant or whatever that looks like, it's almost that rehearsal bit, because then when you have that conversation, you're not doing it for the first time.
Yeah,
it's almost, you know, people usually cringe, don't they, in workshops, and they say, yeah, we're going to do role play, and they go, oh no, I don't want to do role play. But actually, it is just about that practicing for the real event.
Yeah,
and it's taking that sting out of it sometimes, because once you've said it, you're never saying it for the first time again. You've tested the water, so sometimes it is just something as simple as that. Yeah.
Yeah, and also hearing someone else say it, isn't it, as well? And that's the thing. They're probably like taking so much from just what you say. Okay, brilliant. I'm going to kind of move on now to talk about kind of other things that you do.
Yeah,
because
sure. Yeah.
You've got, you're a lady of many talents, and you're a huge part of the Women in Estate Agency Facebook group. And actually, the group became quite an eye-opener for me personally when I joined, I admit. I was quite taken aback when at first I was kind of seeing the sort of conversations that people wanted to open up to and the support that they were really looking for. And really quickly, I saw that it was a brilliant, positive and kind of really supportive space. And actually, some of the questions seemed really quite simple, but people were still kind of reaching out to ask for them just for that kind of reassurance. Now, it's obviously grown to be a really kind of important community for thousands of members, but it's kind of more than a community. It's like an organization. We now obviously hold an annual conference, which is, this next one is booked in for tomorrow. I'd really like to know kind of how the group developed and obviously what's the vision for where it goes next.
Yeah, sure. So Liana Laporto Brown and Claire Hughes set up what was a Facebook group post-lockdown as a group to just connect a few women in estate agency. And as you've said, it just took off from there. I was very humbled, I suppose, very early on to be interviewed by Claire and Liana at the beginning of of the journey, really, asking me similar questions to how we started this conversation about how did I get into estate agency, etc. What it came and what it's grown into is a group of women in estate agency who all want, I suppose the mission being, equality at all levels in the EA sector, whatever that looks like. It's become a group where people can help each other. They can ask about personal issues that they've got. They can ask work-related issues. They can share experiences. You know, when you've had a day when everything's gone wrong and you just want to rant at somebody who perhaps understands because they've been in that space. Or it can be a day when you've really done something and everything's gone really well and you want to celebrate it. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. People ask all sorts of questions. What I love about it is there's no agenda. Everybody absolutely goes in there and helps and supports people. And if somebody doesn't know an answer, they'll say, have you tried? And then you'll see four or five or six different names of people, and then they'll comment and jump on the comments. And I think it's a safe place for people to express feelings, not be afraid to show vulnerability. And I think sometimes people don't want to have that conversation with their work peers. They don't want to have that, but they want to talk to somebody. And yeah, that's what the group has afforded, I think, in the Facebook group. And obviously that's now extended, as you say, to becoming a much bigger organisation in terms of events and the conference. Absolutely, all those things that it's become and continues to evolve. So we now have regional ambassadors all up and down the country so that we can do more localised events. So myself and Linda Stringer are the regional ambassadors for Yorkshire and the Humber, and all of us individually, but on the same day very recently, had a drinks evening. So we all had venues and invited people to come along, and we were all so pleased by, you know, just the fact that people wanted to come and have a chat with people and came out of their comfort zone of coming on their own, not necessarily with people from their business that they work with, and just felt a safe place to go, hey, this is what I do. I want to talk to some new people.
And new people, I guess, that have got like-minded interests, you know, so it kind of feels like a safe space, doesn't it, in terms of a community that you're already part of, even if you don't really know all the faces behind it or you've never met somebody in real life. And I guess that's probably why the conference has become so popular.
Absolutely. You probably think you know people because you've been exchanging messages in a group for so long or commenting on their posts, and then you realise I've actually never met you in person. So there will be a huge amount of screaming tomorrow as people go, oh hi, and all, you know what it's like when a group of people all meet men and women, because we've got a lot of men this year coming along, which is brilliant as well, because whilst the Facebook group is very much just for women, for all the reasons we've talked about, it being a safe place to have perhaps sometimes quite difficult conversations or ask for advice, we want the events absolutely to be for everybody. Yeah, because that's how we will push towards that mission for change.
Yeah, well, I'm very much looking forward to tomorrow, because I'm coming, and it's my first event, and I'm coming with my colleague Colleen. What can we expect?
Lots of noise, lots of conversation, lots of friendliness. We've got there's some great speakers there. There's some great events in terms of advice, conversations where of how people have overcome difficulties. There's some surprises. There are some guest speakers that haven't been announced, and I don't know who they are. I have no idea, but we are told to expect excitement.
You need to look in that crystal ball, Jo.
Yeah, absolutely. And an opportunity for people to network and meet new people. And I think one of the things that as well is there will be people, as I did last year, who didn't know lots of people at that time and went on my own. And you know, there'll be people who will be a little bit nervous about going on their own or whatever. And all I'll say is you don't need to be, because there is always going to be somebody who is going to want to talk to you. And it's really easy to talk to people. There'll be exhibitors as well, as you'll normally find at conferences. There'll be a few surprises, but there'll always be somebody who will be happy to talk to you and chat to you. And I think that's the really important message to get across to people if they are coming on their own, not to be worried, to just go up to somebody and go. And that was always my thing about networking. Quite happy when I'm talking to somebody, but that, how do you start that conversation?
Yeah.
How do you start it? Well, just go up and go, hi, I'm really not sure how to start this conversation, but I want to talk to you, whatever it looks like. I think that's quite often a big stumbling block for people, and they then don't want to go.
Yeah, and it's funny, isn't it? Because in our industry, we would go and meet a landlord and talk to them, or we'd meet a tenant and we'd talk to them, and we've got people walking in and out the door all the time, and we don't think twice about it.
It's a really strange thing, isn't it? I just had that conversation with somebody this morning for exactly that same point. And she said, yeah, but you're really confident to talk to people. I'm like, yeah, but not when I first go into a networking place.
Yeah.
In a room full of people. But the difference is, and I really felt this last year when I went there, everybody was there for the same reason.
Mm. And you mentioned as well, Jo, that there's a lot of men coming this time.
Yes.
So I suppose as women in this space, it's fantastic to have our own kind of zone, but we don't want it to be that the men feel excluded, do we? Like, we don't want it to be all about the women, and actually then there's kind of, because, you know, we have, for example, in our business, a really kind of diverse team. We have, you know, 50% female, 50% male on our board and our exec team. And we're pretty much a 50-50 organization. But for me, we always have been. So, you know, even going back to 10 years ago, it's not ever changed, really. So it's always been the way it has. And I have to say, you know, my male colleagues are fantastic. Like, you know, but I guess that isn't the same for everybody. So how do we make sure the guys don't feel excluded, and how can the guys help, like, support women?
Yeah, I think that's a really, really important point. And it's great that you've had the experience that you have, because you are probably in the minority in our industry in terms of that. I think perhaps more of the tech side of businesses do have a better split than perhaps traditional agencies necessarily have done. Yeah. You'll know that your listeners will know now that hopefully on the committee there are two men, so that again we can get that the committee have got that more diversity within the committee. So yes, it isn't just all about women. And I don't think any of us want to make it a men versus women, because that's not going to move us forward. I think it's really important that we understand perhaps how men feel about some of these topics. And the more that we get men coming to events like this and them talking about what that feels like to be in that space, because certainly last year, because men were so much in the minority, it was amazing to hear them say, God, is that how you feel quite often? You know, you go to a conference and it's 80% men, 20% women. As an area director, when I was at Connell's, I think there was something like 36 of us, and three of us were women. So, you know, that was to switch the tables and men to realise that actually sometimes it can feel slightly uncomfortable. It can feel slightly different. That's even a starting point. But then it's about the conversations that men have within their organisations, within their office, of supporting and encouraging women to perhaps go for some of those roles, go for some of those jobs that perhaps historically they haven't always felt that they could do. So I think that's the big part. I think it's about recognising that men and women have different strengths. We all have, as people, we are all different individuals. But like, how do we work on the strengths that we've all got to be more collaborative? I think it's a bit of a sweeping statement, but I think generally you see it in the group, women are very good at collaborating and supporting one another. I don't necessarily think historically men are as good at doing that. I'm not saying there aren't men that will do that, but I think if they can start to see how this group has grown and what's been achieved by working together without agenda and with a shared vision, then maybe we can start to look at changing some of those perceptions.
Absolutely.
Won't be for everybody, but I think the more that men get on board to have those conversations.
I think in our organisation, and just in terms of what we've seen across the industry, I think that in the last 12 months, we've moved on more than we have probably in 10 years before. I genuinely think that. And I don't know if I'm going to get this quite right in terms of, but I'm sure when I looked at kind of the property mark kind of lineup for the big event, I think it's up mainly female speakers, which I think is a huge change to what we've seen before. So I definitely think that, you know, everything that we've talked about is being heard. And that's kind of such a great thing.
And I think that on the speakers, I think that's absolutely right. And I think what you do see is that when there are women speakers out there, everybody's supporting one another. So people get text messages beforehand saying, go on, you can do, you know, hope it goes really well. And it's a genuineness for people wanting people to succeed and do that. And I think that's quite more female oriented in terms of how those behaviours come across sometimes.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we're quite protective over our girlfriends, aren't we? In a social life kind of environment. And bringing that into kind of the workplace is really nice. It's kind of giving everybody a leg up rather than trying to pull anybody down.
Yes.
But I wanted to ask you as well about kind of in your own life. You mentioned earlier that obviously you had the need to kind of balance being a parent and obviously building a career. And we kind of... you wish kind of, I suppose, the Women in Estate Agency group was around when, you know, you were earlier on in your career to have that support. But what advice would you have for parents, you know, dads as well as mums, or even in fact all carers actually, who are kind of finding the work-life juggling act kind of difficult?
And it is, isn't it? It really is. And I think what is good is we talk about it now. We talk about it a lot more than we ever did. My kids are in their 30s now, and I had a good group of friends who we all had children at the same time, but we'll even say now, we didn't necessarily talk about the struggles we perhaps had with each other, whereas people are much more open about that now, and I think that's great. I think as parents or carers, I think for me it would be remembering first and foremost why you do what you do, why you're a parent, and why you do the job that you do, because that's important. And then talk to your partner and talk to each other about how it's going to work, how this is going to work. And it isn't just always about, and I think this is quite an important part, it's not always just about people who've got children. Because there are people who've got responsibilities, perhaps as carers for older parents or other responsibilities, and we often talk about that, balancing work and children and everything else. I think it's really about talking and how are we going to share that responsibility, how are we going to make this work best for our family, and not only about childcare but also about our own well-being. Because when we're all rushing around and we're trying to bring up kids, they come out, if you're trying to get them to school, you do your job, then you've got after school to sort out, and then you come and they've got homework and clubs, and you do get lost somewhere in there. And sometimes I do think you have to take stock and take a step back and go, right, why are we doing it? What's important? And what can we do? So having that flexibility and recognizing that in our own careers, we, you know, it might be that one of your careers is really on the up at a particular point, that the other person might just have to stay at a particular level for a little bit longer, and then that switches, as do the needs of children and everything else. Things move on. And I always remember a great piece of advice I was given was, while you're worrying about one thing with your kids and you get to the solution, it'll have gone.
Yeah.
And something else will have come along. So don't spend too long worrying about it.
Yeah, I think it's just, life is a phase, isn't it? And you don't even realise when you're moving between the phases, but by the time you know it, you're in the next one. And actually, it's gone. And some instances, you were actually didn't really think you enjoyed it when you were in it, and now you miss it, now it's gone.
I think that's the really valid, you know, Heidi. I think, well, when you're in it, you're trying desperately to get it all right, your job and everything else, and you do miss some of those moments. I do think it's really important, if you can, and I think it's really important for employers, to recognise that those key moments of kids starting schools, kids starting high school, kids going off to university. So they're key life points that should be celebrated, and we should be able to have a bit of time away from work to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't get them again. It doesn't come around again.
And I think that, you know, your point on it, it's not necessarily about kids or, you know, caring for your parents. It's actually just about what is kind of really important to that person. And I'll tell you a kind of a kitchen conversation I had with one of our staff members, Kim, if she's listening. And I was like, oh, you're having a good week. She said, no, I'm not having a good week. My hamster had died. Kim's in her 30s. So her hamster had died. She's got a son. He's grown up. And blah 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 blah, all this stuff's gone, and I've still got my Christmas nails on, and I desperately just need to go to the kind of nail salon to sort my Christmas nails. You know, it's going to be Valentine's Day, like, you know, next week. And I was like, yeah, actually, for Kim right now, that's a really big thing in her world, and all I really wanted to do is go now. If that is such a big thing for you and it's playing on your mind and it's actually making you unhappy, just go now. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? Is having that open dialogue with anyone about what's really going on with them. And sometimes we just need 10 minutes. 10 minutes.
It is something just like that. And people talk about, you know, the work-life balance. It's about life balance. It doesn't have to be work-life balance. It's about life balance. And it's about self-care is really important. And we do neglect ourselves as working parents or whatever. We do put ourselves down the list, but actually, we can't look after everybody and deliver at that high level if we don't look after ourselves. So I think, you know, people talk about self-care being selfish. I don't think so at all. I think self-care should never be confused with selfishness. It's really important. It's really important.
Well, I've been sat here admiring your blouse, Jo, thinking I really need to up my wardrobe stakes. So I'm going to take that as a sign. But
there you go.
I'm going to go buy a new blouse. So, Jo, thank you so much for your time. It's really inspiring. I've enjoyed talking to you, and I genuinely would encourage anyone that's listening, if anyone kind of thinks that they should reach out and get a little bit of help, I can assure you, Jo's such a lovely lady and she's so welcoming. So I'm sure you're going to benefit from that. But before you go, Jo, our regular listeners will know that we ask all of our guests if they have a funny story or anecdote that they would be prepared to share.
Yeah, so you do. And I've thought about these funny stories and tried to work out which is the right one or which is the right tone of 30 years in wherever. There are some that probably aren't right for airing on here. I'll give you one, though, that really makes me smile to this day. I'm about 5'2", and I used to wear very high heels. One day I was sat at my desk and I'd kicked my heel. I couldn't wear them now. I mean, I wear living trainers all the time, as I think most of us do. But I'd kicked my shoes under my desk, and I was having a slightly heated conversation with somebody I worked with. And he was quite a lot taller than me. I was sat down and I stood up to make my point, and realised that my shoes were under the desk, so making this feeling of power to stand up with my high heels didn't work, and I was even smaller than I did. It always just makes me smile that I thought, for whatever reason, that standing up in a pair of heels, it's a bit like they say, if you get stopped by the police, you get out of your car and then you're not sat down. And I stood up and there were my shoes under the desk and this 6 foot something bloke, and it was really not the best thing to do.
But I suppose there in itself, there's a good example, isn't it, how we've moved on. Now we wear trainers or flats and don't actually even really care or think about it. But
I've got boxes of heels in the loft that grandchildren, I think, will potter around the house in or something at some point. Couldn't dream of wearing them now. No, absolutely.
And if we think about it, they're quite an impractical design.
Really? They're ridiculous. Yeah. And I used to park my car and walk to an office about, you know, however far up from the car park, carrying your laptop or whatever in a pair of heels. Whatever for? Nah.
I know.
Funky trainers are definitely the right way forward.
So what is the dress code for the conference tomorrow then?
That was really an interesting one that was floating around in the group. It's wear what you are comfortable in. So if trainers are your thing, or Crocs or flip-flops or stilettos, wear what you're comfy in. Wear what the morning makes you feel like wearing.
Okay, fab. Well, that's good. That's a good tip for everyone. And I really hope it is flip-flop weather because I'm sick of the rain.
It'd be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah. Or really well, nice. Is if you're coming from where I'm coming from, probably.
Yeah. So thank you so much. To ensure that you never miss an episode of Let's Talk Let's, please follow us on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcast. Please leave us a review. Thank you so much to Jo, and thank you all for listening.
Let's Talk Let's, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.